Case and Cure of a Deserted Soul. Chapter 5. A man may be deserted and not know it. I have done with the state of a deserted soul. The next thing is the symptoms and consequences of it, which will give some help to a man to know whether he is in this state or not. And it is needful to declare the signs of it, for often men are in this lamentable case and know it not. As in another sense it is said of Samson when he awakened out of that sleep in which he lost his hair, that he didn't know that the Lord was departed from him, Judges 16, verse 20. So it is true of many, God is departed from them, and they miss him not until they awaken out of their sleep. Question: but is it possible that this man should be so besotted that, falling from a blessed course of sweet communion of God with God, into so grievous an estrangedness from him that he should not perceive it? Can a man fall from such a height into such a depth and not know it? Answer: yea, certainly, and there are many reasons or many causes of it. Number one, there may be a great flush of spirit and much activities from false principles, so that a man may seem to be the same and to enjoy God as he did, when upon closer inspection he has lost much, and the greatest part of his life stands upon other pillars, such as vigor of nature, strength of parts, enforcement of conscience, respects to men, false joys, fanatical dreams, superstitious rules, and so forth. These winds often fill the sails, these weights move the wheels, even there where there is little of God. Number two, God's departure is gradual, as he comes not at all at once, but by degrees, so he departs not suddenly, but gradually. As the sun rises by degrees and sets by degrees, and so night creeps often upon men before they are aware, so God by degrees estranges himself and leaves the soul to wither by degrees. As in a body languishing in a consumption, there is not such an apprehension of the going out of life and the coming in of death as in him that receives a sudden mortal hurt. And as he who wastes his estate by tittle and little is not so sensible of his decay that he loses it all at once, so if a man should fall from a heavenly converse with God, and from a flourishing spiritual state into a lifeless and barren condition suddenly, he would be more affected with it. But now his fall is gradual and therefore less seen. A hill is sometimes drawn out into such a length that the descending slope of it is scarcely apparent. In God's way, a man may descend daily, yet because his decay is, as it were, broken into so many small parts, he hardly sees it. Old age and gray hairs come slowly and slyly. They come by stealth, one gray hair creeping after another, and here and there upon them they know it not, Hosea 7, verse 9. A decrepit, weak state steals upon men, their souls being like draining cisterns which empty themselves by drops, and so emptiness overtakes them before they see it. While they think they are rich, they become poor, Revelation 3, verse 17. Number 3. Men lose much of God and know it not, because they rest too much upon other things that do deceive them. Some of the things which cause them to err in this way are: 1. A pride and conceitedness raised by comparing themselves with others worse than themselves. Number 2. The testimony and applause by which others give them, especially if by many, by the godly, or by the wife. Praise blinds them and holds them in a sweet dream of an imaginary excellency. Or the third part, transient and fleeting gales. God now and then breaking in with potent workings, and that rather to exercise gifts for his office and for others' sakes, that they may be built up when they themselves indeed wither. Number 4. They consider not, nor examine their estates. They lay down their watch, and hold not continual sessions for judgment of themselves. Therefore changes befall them, and they know it not. When men do not audit and inspect their estates, they may grow poor and not see it. Conscience is the soul's watchman, yea, her judge. Now, if there is a vacation, and the judge sits not, a man may be spoiled of much of his estate, and not be righted. Unless we judge ourselves frequently, we cannot know ourselves fully, but may lose and not see it. You see, then, that one may be deserted and not know it, but it greatly concerns a man to be vigilant, that he may discern God's accesses to him and recesses from him. For, letter A, otherwise, though he enjoys God, he cannot be thankful. It's not the presence, but the evidence, in the sense of mercies, that raises thankfulness. He that does not receive, and he that does not know that he receives, is alike unthankful. When a man lies long out of the balance of judgment, he doesn't know whether he's better or worse. God may be present in many gracious counsels, checks, incitements, impulsions, and yet have little thanks for his precious mercies, unless they are observed. If a prince comes in favor to visit you and stands knocking and it is not known, you can't acknowledge that high favor with thankfulness. And though Christ stands at the door and knocks that you may open, that he may come in and sup with you, and you with him, Revelation 3, verse 20, if you do not know this day of salvation and this season of grace, it cannot affect you. What a sin is this! God is with you by secret workings of his Spirit. He's with you in your way and in the means of grace, and you can't see it. But it is with you as with Jacob in another case, who, sleeping, knew not what had befallen him, but when he had awakened, and then he said, God was in this place and I didn't know it. Genesis 28, verse 16. Letter B. Unless you know how it fares with you, if God departs, you will be still and not inquire after him. He who is sick and does not know it seeks not for the cure. The whole, that is, such as think that they are well, need not the physician, but the sick. Matthew 9, verse 12. Such as feel their sickness and pain. They that are rich in their own opinion seek not for supply, but say, they want nothing. Revelation 3, verse 17. He that is full will neither beg nor work for bread. He that thinks all is well and seems to be something when he is nothing, Galatians 6, verse 3, is at rest as one that needs not. It is said that the Pharisees need no repentance, Luke 15, verse 7. That is, they know no need because they don't see their sin. No man seeks that which he thinks he has already unless he is deceived about his possession of it. A man may go on with an opinion of a good estate and be mistaken. As the hungry man dreams, and behold, he eats, but when he wakes up, his soul is empty. And as the thirsty man dreams, and behold, he drinks, but when he wakes up, behold, he is faint. Isaiah 29, verse 8. So you may be in a beggarly condition while you conceive you are rich. Unless you search yourselves or judge yourselves, and until you awaken out of your dream and behold your misery, you will not seek for the remedy. What brings the beast to the river but for him being thirsty and hot? The man that feels no want will not seek for the well of life. Necessity is the mother of industry, and indigence brings or breeds diligence. Indigence breeds diligence. Letter C. It is a contempt of God not to observe what interest you have in him and what communion you have with him. If a friend, much more if a king, comes to your house and you take no notice of his coming in or going out, will he not take it ill or count it as a great neglect of him? Is it not a sign that his company is not valued if his presence not accepted and his absence is not regarded? Things that you prize, you know, things that you keep with care, possess with joy, and lose with grief. A small matter may be lost and it's not even missed, but if a jewel is lost, it is sorely missed. Consider, if a husband had an occasion of departure for a season and the wife should not be loath to part with him or grieve to have him gone, would not all say that she loves him not? When you make a feast, do you not sit down until the chief guest comes? And when he comes, do you meet him with due respect and kind entertainment? If then You sit down to make merry with creatures when God has not come in to dine with you, Revelation 3, verse 20, or when you entertain your pleasures, delights, profits, and other worldly contentments, giving but slender heed and respect to God, so that his presence or absence is not much to you, is it a sign that he's not your chief? Or it is a sign that he's not your chief, but that you despise him. Therefore, be careful to observe diligently how God is with you, that you may not lose him without seeing it, for this is to despise him. Add to this that God's withholding of himself is a sign of displeasure, and it is a great provocation to slight it. Chapter 6. When a man is deserted, his spiritual activity decreases. Since men may be deserted and not know it, and since it so much concerns all to know how it fares with them in this case, I will put forth some rules for their helps in judgment of themselves in this point. These rules are three considerations, or the view of three things. Number one, their graces. Number two, corruptions. And number three, the means of grace. Of the first rule, consider the graces which you have received. For when there is a variation of divine influence, there will be a change in the new man. As you may read in the very face and countenance of the earth, what her receipts are from the heavens, or whether the heat and rain are liberally or sparingly afforded, so when the Son of Righteousness shuts in himself, it will soon appear in the change of your spirits. In times of desertion, there will be a change in your spirits in respect of A, activity, B, light and sight, and C, affection. Decay of spiritual activity appears and shows itself in two things. Number one, unfruitfulness in good, and number two, indisposedness to good. Number one, there is less done and there are fewer fruits. You are not so frequent and so abundant. Duties are curted and clipped. Your service to God is not in the same number and measure as before. You do not do so much good by counsels and persuasion, reprehensions, and such other offices of Christian love, but become more useless and fruitless. In this abatement of action, there are three things to consider. A. It is voluntary. There is an abatement sometimes, for a season, out of necessity, as in a case of bodily infirmity or other inevitable occasions. This is not sinful. The affection and desire to duties are not quenched, but held up in strength. But when men do voluntarily lay down their strength of holy endeavors in the ways of God, and move more slowly and negligently, either much omitting or slightly performing the duties of godliness, it is a sign that it is not with them as it had been, Revelation 2, verses 4 and 5. B. It is internal. It is an abatement, especially of such acts of grace as are internal, and most proper to a godly man as mourning for sin, rejoicing in God, self-judging, heavenly improvement of the promises and providence of God, desire of Christ's appearing, and so forth. There may possibly be a holding up of external duties, such as hearing and prayer and so forth, but if these inward actions and motions of the new man cease, it is a certain argument that a man is upon the losing hand. External duties may be upheld by the power of conscience and other causes, but those inward acts cannot spring from anything but an inward root. Here grace inherent is the womb, and grace assistant is the midwife. The one gives disposition, the other action, so that when a man is less in these, he has less of God. C. It is external. In the abatement of external acts, there will be less done in personal and secret duties than in more public duties, which are with and before others. Pride and other civil respects may enkindle a false fire in a frozen heart. The breath of applause may fill the sails and move the ship, which otherwise would lie still or move another way. A Pharisaical spirit, the spirit of like Pharisees, will be much quickened with praise and glory, and a servile spirit will be much provoked by fears. Men are content to do more than they would, sometimes through hope of the favor of men, sometimes through fear of disfavor. But such are moved not by the spirit that is from above, but by the Spirit that is in the world. Therefore, judge yourselves by your secret acts. Follow yourselves into your closets and retiring places, and observe your diligence, endeavor, and spirit in your hidden ways and secret duties. For what you are in them, that you are indeed. What he's saying is judge yourself by the things you don't let other people see, like you are when you're at home. In these things you may best take your height, when you remove all advantages, for if you stand upon anything, you will seem higher than you are. So you will best see the temper of your spirits when all external enforcements are absent, but when you are yourself, without the ingredients of respects to men to intermingle with your spirits. Number 2. As there will be less done in a time of desertion and an abatement of fruitfulness, so you may discern an indisposedness and unfitness to duties. A. Less willingness. You may do good, but it is rather as a task than a delight. You're not carried to it so much out of liking and contentment as by a compulsory judgment which lays a necessity on you. You do it as a debt, and due to which the law exacts upon pain of imprisonment, but not as a free will offering and a eucharistical sacrifice. When the heart is filled with God, its delight is with Him, and He yields obedience in love, and counts His work wages. An evil heart is hardly drawn to good. It quarrels with the rule, and is loath to be bound. David, when he is in a distemper, and left in the rage of his corruption, was not willing to be limited by the law of God. But when he was himself, then he loved it. Psalm 119, verse 129. Gold and silver was not so precious that he chose it, verse 127. Instead, he took the law as his portion. I said, O Lord, this is my portion. I will keep thy words. Verse 57. When a man enjoys God, his walking with God is his life. He is much affected with conversation with him. This is partly through love and suitableness to God in respect of which he rests, partly through respect to the recompense which he has in hope, and partly for the sense of sweetness which he has in his conversation. God meeting his servants with satisfying comforts, sweet embraces, blessed coruscations, and beams of mercy and loving kindness, so that they say in their hearts with David, it is good for me to draw near to God. Psalm 73, verse 28. Yea, love mightily commands and inclines the heart to duties, but when a man is a greater distance from God than the pleasant ways of holiness, which were to the soul as a delightful paradise, becomes the way of a desert, way of thorns and briars, a wearisome and unpleasant path. B. That zeal and fervency which you had will be much weakened. When God is with the man by powerful and plentiful supplies of the Spirit, he musters up all the powers of his soul and calls in all his abilities to wait on God and to do him service. So, David, praise the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me, bless his holy name. Psalm 103, verse 1. Observe with what contention and strength you were wont to do what you did, for if now you put less to it and go on in a way of spiritual laziness and sloth, it is sure there is a diminution of heavenly influence. This seems to be the case of the church, in the greatest part of it, which caused the prophet to complain. There is none that calleth upon your name, or stirreth up himself to take hold of you. Isaiah 64, verse 7. Chapter 7. When a man is deserted, the light of his mind is darkened by obscurity. The second change which you may discern in yourselves is in your light and sight. The eye of the soul, that gate of spiritual life and death, suffers. And this being weakened, a man like Samson, when his eyes were put out, were brought into great misery and bondage. There is a fourfold evil when God hides himself. 1. Obscurity. 2. Inefficacy. 3. Vacuity. And 4. Incredulity. Incredulity. Of obscurity, God shines not into the soul with such an abundant light as before, but withdraws himself from the intellectual part, and this causes a withering and dying in the whole man. For as our light is, so is our life. Psalm 119, verse 144. Here is the root of the main difference between Christians, true and false, strong and weak. One sees things, while another sees not. A wicked man that is learned, though he seems to have light, yet is in darkness. For his light is not the same light as the light of the saints. And the saints, though they see by a true light, yet because it is weaker in some than in others, therefore there are such differences in themselves and in their lives. Yea, in the same man there is a great difference, according to his light, or according as his light varies. It is light that makes men what they are. This light in the saints is twofold. As the moon has a light in itself, and a light from the sun, so the godly have a light fixed and set up in them by the Spirit, and a light which flows from the Spirit of light as he pleases, and when he is pleased to confer it. And as the moon is very obscure, if the streams of the sun's light are cut off from it, so their habitual light is dim and dusky if the communicated light from the heaven ceases. The godly, as they are made light, and are taught of God by receiving opened understandings, so are full in learning, the Spirit revealing more and more the mysteries of godliness. By the way, I will in a few words explain a little in this enlightening work of the Spirit. There are four things in it. 1. Removing impediments from the eye. 2. Manifestations of the object. 3. An application of the eye to the object. 4. Holding it to the object. 1. Removing impediments of sight, or removing the log or mote or speck out of your eye. There may be light without in the air, yet a house may be dark within because the light may be kept out by shutters, and the sun may shine brightly and make all things clearly conspicuous. Yet the eye, through the impediment of some humor or film oppressing it, may see but darkly. If either external light be damned or cut off in the medium, or internal light be hindered in the organ, there can be no clear sight. Now, as he that draws aside the shutters from before the windows is said to make the house light, and he that removes the humor or film from the eye is said to give sight, so it is in this case which we have in hand. When the saints are first translated out of the state and kingdom of darkness into a state of light, they receive a mind to know God, 1 John 5, verse 20. And they that were blind receive a seeing eye. But many films of lusts and mists of sinful distempers are wont to darken their light. Therefore God is graciously pleased to help their infirmities, and by his power to cure their distempers, as by a precious eye salve. Revelation 3, verse 18. Number 2, manifestations of the object. By this is meant God showing himself unto the soul. For as the best eye cannot see except things show forth themselves, so unless he presents himself and Jesus Christ and the things of his kingdom, we cannot know them. There are three ways, or media, of spiritual sight: the creatures, word, and sacraments. Now, does experience not show that you see more of God in these at one time than at another? And one main cause of this difference and inequality in apprehending God is by different manifestations of himself? The same sermon is a clear vision unto one, yet unto another it is as a riddle. God shines to one in his ordinance and not unto another. Unto some, the gospel is hid, and the light of it does not shine unto them. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 3 and 4. But unto others, in the preaching of the same gospel, God that commands light to shine out of darkness shines in their hearts to give the light of knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 6. Yea, and even as he manifests himself by a habitual light, so also by an actual light, by which his people see all things more clearly at one time than another. It is sometimes day with them, and sometimes night. Number 3. In this enlightening there is an application of the eye to the object. The spirit of the new man gives both habitual principles and inward dispositions, and also draws those dispositions into action, both the seeing eye and the seeing of the eye. Both the power and the act are from the spirit. The eye has a fitness in itself to see, but the faculty or power and the act of seeing is from the soul, for the soul actuates every part. All our conceptions and apprehensions of spiritual things are formerly the acts of the renewed mind, but originally they are from the spirit, which stirs up and strengthens the mind to work and directs it in working. Number 4. Holding the eye to the object that it may not slip and wander from it. Our thoughts are naturally very vain and scattered, and never more unsettled than when they are pitched on that which is not good. This giddiness and unstableness of our minds is a great impediment to our full comprehension and understanding of spiritual things, as I shall have occasion more to declare shortly. Now the Spirit comes with assistance to the tottering and straying spirit of His people, and holds their eye, and stays their thoughts upon their objects, that the soul may drink down knowledge more fully. Transient views let in but little light. Thus you see what this influence of the Spirit is upon the mind of the godly, and by this you may better conceive how darkness and dimness befalls the saints in the time of desertion. There must needs be an abatement of brightness of understanding, where the mind is left clogged with fogs and mists of lusts. Lusts do darken the mind as mud does the water, and as dust does the air, and as glass, the fouler it is, the less light it has in it. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Matthew chapter 5, verse 8. Not only hereafter, but here in the world. The secret of God is with them that fear Him. Psalm 25, verse 14, Proverbs 3, verse 32. A good understanding have all they that do His commandments. Psalm 111, verse 10. But when the heart is infected with pernicious lusts, they corrupt the mind, seducing, deceiving, and diverting also from all serious study of and inquiry into things spiritual. In like manner, when God does not present Himself and things spiritual, how can it be but a man should be in much darkness? Nothing can reveal God but Himself, as the sun is not seen but by her own light. And when God hides Himself, all things are hidden. He that sees less of God sees less in sin, in grace, in Christ, in the gospel, and in all things. When the sun is clouded, all things are proportionably clouded and obscured. Again, if God does not actuate and stir up the mind to inquire after Him and to behold Him, it will be but as the eye of the body in the time of sleep, which sees nothing until it is awakened. And lastly, unless God fastens and fixes the mind upon Himself and other spiritual objects, it will be wandering. And he that goes from the sun goes into darkness. This is the first of those evils forenamed which befalls the mind in a time of desertion. It is darkened. Though it still has light, yet not so much. Though it sees as much as it did extensively, yet not intensively. Even as a weak eye may see as many things as a better eye, yet it sees not so fully and clearly. You may know all things that you have known, yet not in the same clear and spiritual manner. Habitual light is not impaired, but those beams of light which God is wont to cast in the soul are lessened. And when it is thus with you, that you have declined in your acquaintance with God, and in your apprehension of the sinfulness of sin, the beauty of holiness, the excellency of Christ, the preciousness of the covenant, then you have cause to sit down and weep, for you have not so much of God in you as you have had.